Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in an evolving world. This series explores the idea of how to become more conscious beings, how to live in a more conscious way on a planet that's developing a greater possibility of who we are. Tonight's guest is very much involved with that whole development of our potential as a human race. He is Steve Bassett. He is part of the Exopolitics Forum. There'll be a conference coming up in Washington September 14th to the 16th. You can go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and you'll find all the information there. Steve, thank you.
Hi, Alan. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, I know there's this whole conference coming up, but how you been since the last conference I saw you at? You want to talk about where you've been recently?
Since the X conference in 2005 ended, I had to take a bit of a sabbatical because we lost a lot of money in those first two conferences, nearly $40,000. And so I came out to one of my supporters brought me out to the Bay Area, East Bay Area in California, San Francisco, and I stayed there for 18 months working on the same things, but in a much more lower-key environment. Washington had gotten incredibly cynical after the war got underway, and 2006 in particular was just a god-awful year.
I think what I understand is exopolitics is a way of bringing out the idea of welcoming extraterrestrial races into a political forum. Is that how you would describe exopolitics?
Well, in a way, yes. But exopolitics is, in fact, many things. Exopolitics is the new term within the lexicon. Mm. Originally brought into play by Alfred Weber in 2000. And it is the defining term, which is the umbrella for all of the subject matter surrounding the social and political implications of ET phenomena, ET beings, and our government reaction to that. It's a huge field. Mm-hmm. It will eventually be taught in universities, have its own department, maybe a part of the political science department. So the disclosure process, the revealing process, government cover-ups, these are all part of exopolitics. So that item you mentioned was one.
Right.
Eventually, exopolitics will include our actual, what we'll call galactic diplomacy, how we formally engage these extraterrestrials and so forth. But that's basically the icing on a cake that's still in the oven.
But don't you think the reason we are not actually engaging this as far, I mean, there's a sort of isolation, quarantine, subconscious revelation. I mean, we're not together as a planet. We are very disassociated and incoherent, not unified as a planet. How could we actually meet a galactic, you know, race or federation with our own fragmentation going on?
Well, first of all, there's no some sort of cosmic requirement that in order to meet or learn about the ET presence, you have to have a global unity. We've never had global unity, but we've actually done a lot of things. You know, we launched the space program, and we've created civilizations. Unity is well, probably impossible. What in fact, don't think in terms of global consensus and unity. Think in terms of critical mass.
Okay.
In order for things to happen, you have to have a critical mass of consciousness in a certain area, a critical mass of awareness of something. The Copernican Revolution, for instance, was launched by a very few people who had determined the nature of the sun and the Earth's relationship. So we have more than that critical mass in our society right now. And as a result, this disclosure process, which is part of the exopolitics we've discussed, is moving forward now at an accelerating pace, which will ultimately lead, I think very soon, to one of the world's major governments, possibly ours, not necessarily ours, announcing the ET presence, formally announcing that presence, which is then the disclosure event and the beginning of what will be a whole new world. A whole new paradigm for us to deal with.
Well, absolutely, it'll be a whole new paradigm. But didn't France recently release some documents, and Brazil also have released some documents about U.S. UFO presence?
Exactly.
France released 1,600 documents from the French Space Agency. The UK released 1,600 sighting cases that had been in their classified files. The UK released 4,000 sighting cases. Brazil has entered into sort of a formal arrangement with the ET researchers down there. All of this required the approval of the Minister of Defense. Mexico did something similar. These are extraordinary circumstances, and what they all are is, in fact, a message from these countries to the United States that they're patient with our truth embargo here.
Why is it wearing out? Why doesn't Brazil just come out with it? According to Roger Lear, they have a whole craft. Their government has recovered it. You know, that whole case down in Brazil that Roger Lear investigated. They have the proof. Why don't they just come out with that?
Well, the ultimate answer to that question, of course, would be you'd have to ask Brazil. But I think it's fair to say that the winning of World War II, which was America had a great deal to do with, and quote the saving of the world from the great communist threat, particularly the Soviet Union, we built up a lot of chits with the rest of the First World, Second World countries. They owe us. And we're also a very powerful nation, and so we have been the leading power in the free world, obviously, since the end of the Second World War, and certainly that's roughly the same today. And these countries had deferred to us, probably in private agreements, that we would be the decision maker on the issue of the ET reality, and for them to breach that understanding, there would be consequences. And they haven't yet been ready for those consequences, but recently they clearly have lost patience. And I think it's not trivial that in the last 6 years, our image in the world, our esteem in the world has dramatically fallen for other reasons, and so we simply don't, our chits are used up. And it's possible they're going, in one of these countries, and probably the most likely country is China, right? China may be the country that pops the cork on this bottle of Chateau, you know, UFO, 2007, and they will get the thousand-year legacy of ending the cover-up.
Right, but don't you think it's actually even beyond governments? It's about whoever's controlling, the controlling forces, the ruling families. Those people really seem to be the shadow governments, let's say. It's not our congressmen. It's the forces behind that.
Look, my area is not shadow governments and uber powers. However, I believe there are controlling interests. I also believe that the estimation of their power is probably overdone by those who are concerned with that and think about that. I think that these uber powers are primarily concerned in their own interests, and as a result, there's plenty that gets by them, and plenty they can't deal with because it doesn't immediately direct their own interests. So think of them more as well-entrenched, narcissistic, cabals as opposed to global operating uber authorities. This is a big planet, 6 billion people. Trust me, it's a chore to run the damn thing. So plenty happens that has nothing to do with some authoritative figure or some black magic cabal. History is very rich, and so the public's interests are often served because the powers that be, right? The powers that be, PTBs,
right.
Can't do it all. And so right now they're losing. The powers that be right now are basically have been losing the later innings of the ballgame.
Right. I mean, as the ridiculous war in Iraq gets even more ridiculous, people are waking up that they might have some control over their lives and they have power to take back what true knowledge is as opposed to the lies we've been given. So I think in that camp, your research is gaining more ascendancy. It's more possible to come forward. But the other aspect of that is that when disclosure does happen, or if and when, I'm sure it will happen in the next, I think it would happen in the next 10 to 20 years for sure. We can't hide anymore. But there's the whole idea of free energy, the energy these devices run on. It will be a great shock to the oil corporations, and those are the people that I've heard are really suppressing the knowledge that people are invested in fossil fuels. Do you agree with that?
Not so much directly suppressing, uh-huh. as supporting the managing entities within the government that wish to keep the embargo going. All right, meaning, you know, moral support, maybe helping to elect certain people into Congress. They don't control it, but they certainly have a vested interest in keeping oil at the highest dollar price and selling as many barrels of oil at the highest dollar. Of course, they're already richer than God, understand, so it's not as if we had free energy tomorrow. They're all going to become poor. Believe me, they're all going to die, you know, wealthier than you and I. Let me go back to something you said earlier. Look, your audience needs to know something. If they take away anything from our chat tonight, they need to take away this, all right? These very simple points. Let me make them very clearly and unambiguously.
Good.
There is an extraterrestrial presence engaging the planet. It's not speculation. It's a 100% certainty. The proof is overwhelming. I've had plenty of people, number of people in government confirm it to me. Others in government have confirmed it to other of my colleagues. The research is massive. We've got, you know, boatloads of proof. So that's a done deal. There is an extraterrestrial presence.
No, I'm totally with you on that. I've seen them. I've seen pictures. I know they're here. I've had my own experience. I mean, I am totally, yeah, 100%.
So I knew we were on the same train on that one. Now, the second point is the government is fully aware of this ET presence and has decided in the 40s to embargo the formality of it from the world's people. That's also a certainty. And then the third point your listeners need to take with them is this. The embargo of this truth by our government deference from other nations is collapsing literally right now as we speak. It is falling apart, and that your listeners need to be prepared to hear this announcement of the ET presence as soon as tomorrow morning.
Why? What will that do?
Well, because when the building starts to collapse, all right, you can speculate on how long it'll take for the roof on your apartment to fall in, but you sort of have a sense that it's going to fall in soon, and it would be best not to stay in the room. But here's another analogy. The embargo is like a huge apple. Ripened apple hanging in the top of an apple tree, and any reasonable person knows it could fall at any moment. Just the right breeze from the right direction and it falls. They don't know for certain when it would fall, but if they stood under that apple, there's a good chance it's going to bonk them on top of the head. So I'm telling you, this thing is ripe and ready to go. And there's another major example that you need to use for reference, and that is the collapse of the Soviet Union, which had been predicted, but nobody believed, because of the enormous control they had over their society and citizens. Once the thing started to fall apart, it was inevitable, and when it finally fell, it fell so fast the CIA didn't even know it had happened. So think of the truth embargo's collapse exactly in the way you would think of the Soviet Union's collapse. It's imminent, and it could happen at any time.
Well, the truth embargo then must also include the war. I mean, so much government cover-ups on all levels. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just the UFO cover-up, although that might be really top. I mean, it's everything. It's everything we've been lied to. And, I mean, we don't even know how many people were killed during the Katrina hurricane. The government won't even release those numbers because it's too embarrassing for them. I mean...
You're right. You've just raised now the second reason why I've devoted my life to this work, and my colleagues have done the same. We learned along the way that inside the box that included the ET reality and the embargo was a whole, I want to say, I can't use that word, I'm going to be nice. I'm just going to say it's a whole boatload of abuses of power and secrecy by the first world nations, from the Soviet Union all the way through NATO to the United States. And it's a mess. It's ugly. It's basically a... it's an outhouse. It's a porta potty, and by ending the truth embargo on the question, the lid of that box will open just enough for us to get a suction hose into that box and suck the rest of the crap out of it. So it will in fact open up the door for the first major reform in our society, particularly at the level of secrecy in government, in the last 75 years. So there's much more at stake here than just learning that the ETs are around.
What?
In fact, I think the future of America as a democratic republic is at stake.
Well, you also, I heard on the Fox News report, I saw you're also then supporting Hillary Clinton as a candidate that will come forward to expose, to give, is that true? And why Hillary, And I know Bill Richardson, he's from New Mexico, from, you know, from that area. But why Hillary Clinton?
Almost. I'm not supporting her.
Oh, okay.
What I did was I wrote an article recently called The E.T. Ticket, which Fox News was interested in. And essentially, what I said was, looking at the 20 candidates that are currently in play, Democratic and Republican candidates that are in the debates, there's 20, and looking at the best possible pairing on either side for disclosure, that the Hillary Clinton-Bill Richardson ticket was the best ticket. I gave the reasons for that in the article. I'm simply doing analysis here. I'm not wearing a Hillary Clinton button. But I also pointed out in the ET article, ET ticket article, that ironically, but maybe not ironically, the most likely ticket, if you're a political analyst like myself, that you would put your money on, meaning, you know, it has the best odds, like in the Kentucky Derby, of emerging from either of the conventions, is in fact the Hillary Clinton-Bill Richardson ticket, which I find a rather interesting historical coincidence.
Yeah, but what, I mean, I didn't actually read the article. Can you just give me a good reason why you think Hillary would go towards disclosure?
There are two reasons. These are the key things. Hillary Clinton was in the White House with her husband in March of 1993, just after the inauguration, when Lawrence Rockefeller approached the administration through John Gibbons at the Office of Science and Technology Policy to allow him to make a report and talk to Clinton directly in a public way about ending the cover-up by dumping the documents out.
Uh-huh.
This was a decision Lawrence had made, and he invested a good deal of money in this initiative, which went on for 2 years and involved a lot of meetings and a lot of, you know, reports, and the books were written and blah, blah, blah. It eventually failed and dissipated in the milieu of the entire attack on the Clinton administration from all directions. Now, Hillary Clinton knew about this initiative and watched it unfold from the White House, along with one of Clinton's chief and closest advisors, John Podesta. But we also know, and I have the news articles to prove it, that Hillary and Bill went and visited Lawrence Rockefeller at his J.Y. Ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, in 93, 94, and 95, where it's almost certain, unless someone can make a counter-argument, that they talked with Rockefeller about this issue privately. She knows that something is going on. She saw something unfolding at that time. So did John Podesta. Now, Bill Richardson, on the other hand, he, in the foreword to a book called The Roswell Big Diaries, actually stated in that foreword that he didn't believe the Roswell explanation had been made yet, and that it needed to be reinvestigated, and went out of his way to point out that the American public had a right to know the truth and could handle the truth. That's in direct opposition to the government's stated policy. And when he wrote that foreword to that book, and you can find it on the internet, Roswell Big Diaries, he knew that he was going to be running for president. But of course, he's not really running for president. Everybody in Washington knows he's running for vice president. And so he added himself in 2005 on that, I think four or three, whatever.
Right.
He added himself in that forward, and John Podesta then did the same thing in 2002 and 2003 when he supported and spoke at the National Press Club about the Coalition for Freedom of Information. So you have major Democratic figures who are tied together. They all know each other.
Right.
Podesta knows Hillary, knows John. John knows Bill Richardson. And then Bill sitting in the background watching it all like a Cheshire cat. They know that something's going on. They partially outed themselves. So can you see why a Hillary Clinton-Bill Richard ticket makes for a very interesting disclosure cocktail?
Well, I think, yeah, I think if whoever was president and came forward with this information would be a very popular and honored president. And I think, yeah, if she does know about it and was able to outrun the people that want to keep this, you know, shut down, I think she could do it. I mean, I have a good feeling about her. I've met Bill Richardson. He's a really nice guy. He spoke at my graduation from acupuncture school in Santa Fe. Yeah. So I think also, though, he does have, as governor of New Mexico, he must have access to some Roswell documents, though, that other people don't. Wouldn't you say that?
No, he doesn't have access to documents, but he was the Secretary of Energy, the ambassador of the UN, and he's a high guy. He's well-liked. He has plenty of people that could tip him off on this. Mm. He's just been tipped off. He knows the ET issue is real, as does Hillary, as does Bill, as does John Podesta. The Democrats are almost locked to win the next election. And so it is for this reason that I believe the Democrats are, in fact, planning to disclose under their next, quote, Democratic administration. I believe Podesta, the reason Podesta outed himself in 2002 and 2003 is they firmly believed they were going to win in 2004. Well, they didn't. So then Podesta stepped back, said very little after that, and it was Bill Richardson that came out of himself the next time around, anticipating a win in 2008. And so that, but let me make another point. The president that does do this will receive a legacy that will be one of the greatest political legacies of all time. That president will be revered throughout all of history. That president will become a Churchillian, a Rooseveltian figure.
Right.
And that legacy is available to whoever takes the mantle, and that's one reason why it could happen tomorrow, because can you think of a president right now that is in desperate, frenetic need of powerful legacy?
Well, no, I agree. I mean, Nixon was credited as opening up China despite the horrible reputation and political career he had. He's still acknowledged as the one who opened the door there. And
absolutely, and he got a lot of credit for that. And that, think of that legacy, the opening of China.
Yeah.
And on a scale, assign that a point of, say, one. And call that 1 point. Mm-hmm. The disclosure president will get 10,000 points.
I totally agree with you, but if Hillary knew then, why didn't Bill Clinton come forward in the 90s with this information?
Very interesting. I've talked about this at length. As soon as Rockefeller approached the administration virtually in the second month of the administration, and I believe the moment that the military intelligence complex learned that this initiative is underway, they went absolutely bonkers. And that one of the great untold stories of the Clinton administration is that the massive attacks that were generated from the right against them, funded primarily by Richard Mellenscape, are going after every conceivable thing, pork bellies, travel gate, you name it. I mean, if Hillary put a miscolored braid that didn't match her blouse, I mean, they would launch an impeachment hearing, that one of the reasons they acted so inappropriately, and a lot of the press admitted this, they didn't understand why these attacks were going on. It was much ado about nothing as far as they were concerned, was the hidden story. They were trying to essentially denude the president, use up all his political capital, so that to prevent Clinton from ever having enough leverage to, in fact, exercise the disclosure option, and they kept him under fire. Now, here's a side story that supports that. During the Rockefeller Initiative, Clinton said nothing, but one thing he did do, which later came out, was that he instructed his associate attorney general, close personal friend, Webster Hubbell, from Arkansas, to who he appointed justice to ask about the UFO issue over at Justice and see what he could find. Well, Hubbell did more than that. He called up NORAD and some other agencies and was making queries. Well, you can imagine that really shook up the troops at Cover Up Central. And so very quickly after that, Hubbell came under indictment for everything, including the sinking of the Maine. All right, and so that's an example of why I believe there was a massive counterattack on the Clinton administration, not because they hated him, they did, not because he was an awful president, he wasn't, he made a lot of them rich, but because there was no way the military intelligence community was going to allow Clinton to be the disclosure president, and so they hounded him right up until the day he left, including, obviously, an impeachment.
Yeah, but what makes you think they're going to allow that to happen now with Hillary? What has changed?
The Republican Party, the state of the Republican Party as of March of 2009 will be the equivalent of a pack of starving Cocker Spaniels compared to the Republican Party of 1993. Okay. They have been eviscerated by their own mistakes, their own arrogance, their own follies, and so they will have almost no power, and I predict that the Democrats, in fact, will win a two-thirds veto-proof majority of the House and Senate in 2008.
So the military-industrial complex will not have the power coming up in 2008 that they had in 93, 94. That's what you're...
The Republican neocon empire will have crumbled, and so their ability to influence the military, which is fundamentally patriotic, and I believe it serves in the interest of the American people, they will not be able to influence them and force them to act not only in their own worst interest, but in the American people's interest. And then you'll see an emerging body of patriots within the military intelligence community coming forward and helping to drive what will ultimately be the disclosure process, unless the disclosure event, unless, of course, France or in England or China or Canada does it first.
But, okay, let me ask you a bigger philosophical question. Are we ready? Are we ready to embrace a reality that totally blows away most people's religious and not even political, but just their sense of what reality is? People live in a very small box of their own reality. Are we ready for this?
You know, there's two points. There's two things to be said about that.
Yeah.
One is that, once again, what is important is not that all of us are ready, but that a reasonable, what I would call critical mass of people are ready, and I believe that critical mass is more than established. But the second point is probably even more important. It no longer matters whether we're ready or not. It's like the Catholic Church basically said in the 1500s, our flock is not ready to hear that the earth goes around the sun, so we'll just embargo that information. Well, that was like standing on the ocean, on the side of the ocean, and spitting into the tide. There was no way they could prevent that truth from eventually emerging, and that was before the internet. So it no longer matters whether we're ready or not. This information, which is simply a statement about the way the world is, which is we aren't alone and there's more civilizations out there,
right,
is simply going to come out, period. And so if you're not ready, get ready.
But don't you think the UFOs, the ETs, whoever they are somewhat complicit in the cover-up? They haven't landed on the White House lawn, if we're going to use that cliche, but aren't they waiting for, or maybe they don't care if it's revealed? I mean, what's your opinion about that?
That's a very astute statement. I've heard it many, many times, and it gets to the core of one of the key exopolitical questions. Why haven't the ETs force majeured disclosure, which they could do at any time they wanted to?
We'll
call it the independent state scenario. They certainly can do it, and they haven't, and that's a very valid question. It's a tremendous question.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know the answer for certain. I can only give you my assessment. All right. Based on all the evidence, we know the way they operate, the sightings and everything else, there are these points to keep in mind. One, they have the ability to be more secretive than they are. In other words,
they have an ability to be more secret, so they could hide.
I think they could have been more discreet, but they've chosen not to be. They've allowed themselves to be seen, to be photographed. They're parking crop circles all over England. They're abducting people, letting them remember the incident and all this stuff. So they're acting rather, how would you say, strangely, if their idea is to be secretive. On the other hand, they don't pull the trigger. Why would they do that? Here is my best explanation. What we're going through today, right now, is a cosmic bar mitzvah. We're coming to age, right, as a planet,
yeah,
and we have no choice in that. Just like a kid has no choice in becoming 13 years old, and he gets bar mitzvahed, you know, by his mother and his dad. That's the way it is. It doesn't mean that after his bar mitzvah, he's now a full-grown adult.
Right.
So this bar mitzvah happens with every sentient civilization in the galaxy, and it's happening to us now, all right?
I agree. And, I love that.
Right.
I love that now.
All right. But there's a process. There's a process that you go through here, and I think it's been repeated countless times throughout the galaxy. You don't just suddenly show up with a bunch of saucers, over the cities of a planet with 200 nations and 6 billion people and destroy the social contract by making every government look like idiots.
Uh-huh.
First, you force you drive a self-disclosure process by sort of appearing, but not conclusively. You drive that self-disclosure process until the nations of that planet acknowledge to themselves and to their own people that the ETs are here. And then, once they've taken the embargo off, the universities jump in, the foundations jump in, the money turns up, the research goes on, the documentaries are made, the movies are made, the books are written, and everybody goes ET nuts for 3 or 4 years until they're sick of the issue, right? And everybody's kind of up to speed, and it's like, you know, oh, no big deal. And then formal contact can take place without the social disruption. That's the reason why they have not landed on the White House lawn yet.
Mm. I like that picture that you paint. So now, as we let's look down the road of exopolitics, are peace treaties enacted? I mean, what is the progression? And so they land. How do we deal as a planet with this presence? I mean, what do you propose?
Well, I got to say that when you have a paradigm shift of that magnitude, have to kind of project yourself on the other side of it. You know, it's like asking the Jews after they were released from Egypt and Ramses, okay, look, you're going to be roaming the desert for 40 years. What do you plan to do when you get, you know, the River Jordan? All I can say is this. The entire world will be sort of rebuilt in after disclosure takes place, all of human history will be re-examined with the extraterrestrial hypothesis as a full-blown variable, and we will kind of reconstruct our reality in a hopefully an orderly fashion. Businesses will, money will change hands, a new business will be created, other businesses will attenuate. There will be enormous interest in science and math with kids lined up around the block for miles trying to get in those programs, interest in space, enormous interest in ETs. You will have a global focus on this issue unlike anything that's ever been seen in the history of humankind here. And we hopefully, the good guys will move to the forefront and help make some sense and make as much lemonade as they can out of these lemons. But there's no guarantee. In fact, the bad guys could use this lever and pull some bait and switches and some razzle-dazzle and smoke and mirrors. And the next thing you know, we're involved in some galactic war with beings that could turn our planet, you know, into a, you know, a smoking heap of, you know, radioactive ash in 20 minutes. And that would not be a good thing. So that's why I'm doing these interviews, my man. That's why I've done 1,000 of them, is because I'm trying to get people ready to go here.
Have you approached the UN and put together some proposal for that as a body of unified nations? I mean, has any work been done? That?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people approached the UN going way back 30 years, including Gordon Cooper, Alfred Weber. Is now involved with the UN. He's going to be at my ex-conference. Antonio Hineas is going to be at my ex-conference. He was involved in approaching the UN. But the UN has been so diminished by deliberate American policy that it's a kind of a non-factor in the world right now, which was a big mistake. But yeah, that is a significant exopolitical issue, and I should mention that some of the people that have approached the UN in the past will be at the conference September 14th through 16th. We have got lots of room for people if they want to get to D.C. and come to this extraordinary event. All the information is at x-conference.com. That's x-conference.com. You can learn everything about it and sign up right there. So I hope we'll get some of your folks out and get involved with us and send a message to Washington. That's why I hold it. That's why I hold the conference there.
Well, are you inviting any Congress people to the conference?
All of the Congress will be formally invited within a few days. I just have to get back to Washington from California and get the invites out. And if they can't come, I'm asking them to send their staff. And we're inviting all the presidential candidates, too, to come and give us 20 minutes of their time.
That would be great. It's also on www.paradigmresearchgroup.org for some more information there. Can you just tell a little bit about your own story? I mean, where did you come from? How did the UFO presence appear in your life? What was your development?
Long and short, I started out in physics. I got a degree in physics. I was going to continue in astrophysics, but I was kind of an unhappy guy. I was during the Vietnam War period, and so I sort of spiraled off in other directions. I got involved in finance, business, consulting, nothing particularly interesting. But the issue was always with me. And
From a childhood, this issue was always with you?
Oh, yeah. I read nothing but science fiction when I was a kid, and I knew as early as when I was 19 that the UFOs were ETs. I mean, it was obvious to me that they were ETs. I couldn't understand why there was such a debate about it, and that was 1965.
Well, did you have your own experience, though?
No, I have no experiences. My interest in the subject is intellectual and ethical, and most of my passion comes not from wanting to know the ETs are here. I already know that. My passion comes from what I've learned about the damage that's been done to America and the American dream and our constitutional republic by the vast secret empire that was created in 1947, and so I'm concerned for the nation.
So you were kind of doing these other things, and when did it become your passion? What was the trigger point that pushed you into this work?
One day, ironically enough, I got up, I looked around, and said, "By God, I'm going to die." You know, it was like up until then, I thought, you know, there's a good chance I could live forever. And then I realized I wasn't, if I didn't make an effort to involve myself in something that I truly wanted to do and was important, it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, and a lot of people in your audience have reached those points, and they're thinking about them right now. And when you get to that point, it's amazing how fast you can get your butt in gear, and I did, and I plunged into the issue in January of 96 when I went to volunteer as a development person for John Mack's Program for Extraordinary Experience Research in Cambridge, and after 4 months, I went down to Washington, set up an office starting on July the 4th of 1996. founded Paradigm Research Group and registered as the first lobbyist in history on this issue. And since then, everything I've done has been a political advocacy tool to drive the process of disclosure and lead to disclosure. Yeah. So that's the story in a few words, Alan.
No, I really appreciate your passion and dedication to this, because we need someone like you to really keep moving it out there, keep being on the news. I mean, that was an awful thing the Fox News people did, was not even take your point seriously. I mean,
but Alan, let me tell you, no, they did exactly what I wanted them to do. It was perfect. But I understand why you may not have got that. It's okay.
Okay.
It's my, you know, I'm maneuvering here in areas that most people are not, you know, aware of.
Right.
Look, they contacted me. I told them about my ET Ticket article. They loved the idea. After all, it's Fox News.
Yeah.
So they put me on camera while I was down in Roswell. I didn't have a monitor, so I didn't even know what they were doing. I learned later that as soon as they asked me the ET Ticket question, they popped a graphic up there of Hillary and Bill Richardson with a saucer between them. Well, that's exactly what I wanted, because I know as soon as the operatives, you know, as soon as the, you know, the aides and advisors to Hillary Clinton and Bill Richardson saw that, right, and watch everything, they probably coughed up a furball, because that's the last thing they wanted, was Hillary to be associated with the UFO issue. And then you know what happened after that?
What?
2 days later, William Booth, the reporter for the Washington Post, wrote a full-page, full-cover article, front page, Washington Post, Sunday, July 8th, and parked me in the first two paragraphs, talked about my political action committee, talked about my work, started mentioning, you know, a lot of the exopolitical lexicon, and then later in the article referred to Hillary Clinton and Bill Richardson as the ET ticket. So now, after the Fox thing, the advisors to these two candidates then open up the Post, and there it is again. So, I mean, there's furballs all over the place. They're not happy, and I intend to make them even more unhappy. And there's a simple point here, and I hope your listeners appreciate this. Anybody who aspires to be the President of the United States but doesn't think the presence of extraterrestrials is an issue of significance is not worthy of the office. And it doesn't matter whether you want to be the first woman president or the first black president or the first Hispanic president or the first Jewish president or the first Mormon president. It doesn't matter. If you can't talk about this issue, and a lot of others, by the way, because there's a whole list of things they can't talk about because they lose some votes, right? Because they don't want to really have to work hard to get in office. And then once they get in office, they want us to leave them alone so they can just be in office, which is why America's going to the dogs right now.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. What matters is, if they have the guts to speak to every issue that's out there, even if they at least do it. I mean, if their position is there's absolutely nothing to the ET presence, I'm certain of that, then fine, let them say that. Let us be the judge. But if their attitude is, oh no, I won't say anything, I'll skate by the issue, then I don't want them in charge of 10,000 nuclear weapons. Does anybody in your audience want that?
Right. So have you ever talked to Hillary Clinton directly about this?
I met her. I've seen her in person. I've never talked to her about the issue, but believe me, I've sent plenty of stuff to her, and I'm sure that she knows who I am and what I'm doing.
So do you think maybe disclosure tried to happen before, or some gauging of the public's reaction may have been around, like with the Orson Welles War of the World? Was that some kind of government or secret government seeing what the public's reaction would be? Do you think there's
that was a product of Orson Welles' genius, but
yeah.
The government used it as a propaganda piece. The whole thing was bogus.
Right. I know it was bogus, but you don't think it was... I mean, because look how the public reacted. There was hysteria.
No. What I'm saying is the using of that incident as a justification for a truth embargo was bogus. What Orson Welles did was create a phony, fake news broadcast that made people think it was live and real, announcing ETs were here. Well, of course they're going to get upset. Look, if ABC were to put a fake news program on tomorrow night saying that a meteor was about to hit the Earth, and they had, Ted Koppel there, you know, giving them a point-by-point analysis, I can tell you there'd be people running around in the streets with their hair on fire. I mean, it's irrelevant. It's a fake broadcast. So the government said, well, we'll use that as an excuse that, you know, the people are so easily panicked by a fake news broadcast that's deliberately made look real that, well, we can't tell them the truth about ETs and about oil and about overpopulation and about depleted uranium and about global warming and 10,000 other things that they'd rather not talk about, right? Because, you know, running the government is no longer what they do. Staying in office, you know, hiring prostitutes and generally making
fools of themselves is pretty much all they do now.
So we're going to need a new... So I understand what you're saying. We're going to need a new president coming with new energy. And what I see, and tell me if it's what you see, is that the president sitting in front of the... on television, addressing the American people, saying, this is a major moment in human history, and this is what I have to tell you about. I mean, is that how you see it happening, disclosure?
That would be ideal, though the president probably won't make the announcement. The president will announce the press conference from the Oval Office. Then it will shift to the press conference at another location. There'll be an important person moderating the press conference. They will then announce it. This depoliticizes the initial event, so it'll be more along those lines. And it could, and yeah, and that administration would then become the disclosure administration, and the legacy of that event would go to them for all time. If I were the current president, and I am a registered independent, and my work is nonpartisan, but if I was the current president and I was facing what he's facing, I would be looking around for another legacy as fast as I could. And this legacy is right there. All he has to do is pick it up.
But don't you think we will, a president or whoever, the administration would have to then provide proof, and then they would have to say, look, we lied about Roswell, we lied about the rescued source. I mean, there's a bunch of lies and dark, shadowy stuff that's going to come out because of a disclosure.
But Alan, think,
yeah.
It's 2007. Most of the people that started the embargo are dead.
Right.
Most initial and fundamental lies were by other administrations.
Mm.
It's
so they,
not that bad. It's
they will have to
bad.
Come out with some proof, though, in a press conference. I mean, what do you think they would, I mean, pictures or if the craft?
The citizen science movement has huge boxcars full of proof. What the government has, I can't even imagine. But just start with the gun camera footage from the chase planes that have been going up to intercept these craft for the last 50 years. They've got hundreds of miles of that stuff. Not a single inch of it has ever been put public. They could show gun camera footage and that would be the ballgame. They've got other things. I mean, believe me, when the press conference is over, there won't be a single person in the United States except for the hardest core who think, oh, that's another charade. No. This is not something you can fake.
Well,
so don't worry about that problem.
No, it's very, very exciting. And this is, we are building towards this moment in history, which everything after disclosure will be totally different than it was before disclosure.
The disclosure event is, in fact, and will be the most profound event in human history. And I'm going to have to close with this, Alan,
okay.
Because my time is at an end here. But it will be the most profound event in human history. And the fact is, all of us are alive today when this is going to happen. And that, to me, is an unbelievable stroke of luck. I'm just ecstatic that I'm going to see this. You're going to see it. And
how soon do you predict a disclosure?
How soon?
Yeah, like in the next 2 years,
my,
1 year?
Position, which is why I set the paradigm clock at paradigmresearchgroup.org at 15 seconds to midnight a year and a half, 18 months ago, is that disclosure is now imminent and the embargo could collapse at any time and you could have it at any moment. Strategically, I believe the Democrats are planning disclosure in the early months of their, quote, new administration in 2009,
right.
When they will have enormous power, enormous political capital, and very likely both houses of the House and Senate. It's an ideal situation for them. So that's my current call. Is it certain? No, of course not.
Okay. I mean, thank you so much, Steve, for all the work you're doing. And the conference, it will be coming up September 14th to 16th. It's open to everybody. And you can go to the EXO, what's the web? Because I have your Paradigm Research Group website up.
The site is paradigmresearchgroup.org. And there's links to the X conference. But go right to x-conference.com. Look at the conference. There's a registration section there. You can register by mail, by phone. You can register by PayPal, whatever.
Okay.
Still plenty of room. The hotel block is almost done, so you better book a room right away. We're going to have a pretty substantial event there. And then we're going to have another one in April of next year in the middle of the primaries, the presidential primaries, April 18th through 20th at the same hotel. It'll be the fourth X conference. So we're doing everything we can to get this issue into play, including putting YouTube questions, you know, in play for the CNN YouTube debates and the ICOT debates at Stephanopoulos's this week. Keep it on. We're gonna get this question parked under the noses of these candidates before this interminably long cycle is over, and they're gonna have to say something one way or the other. And we need your audience's help
if they're at a town hall, ask the question. If they know some media in their community, demand they ask the question. We want to know what their position on the ET issue. If they don't even dignify it with an answer, then we shouldn't dignify them with our vote.
Thank you, Steve. I hope to see you at the conference. Good luck. I hope we get a tremendous amount of people to build public support for all this disclosure information.
Thanks, Alan. You've been a great help. Good luck with your show. I know it's going to grow, and perhaps I'll see some of your people there.
I hope you will. Yes.
Peace. Huh?
Okay. I'll talk to you. I'll email you this week. Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Steve. I've been talking to Steve Bassett of the Disclosure Project of the Exopolitics Forum.
Your call has been forwarded to an...
Hello. And that will be coming up September 14th to the 16th. And some of the other people at that conference coming up will be Richard Dolan, who is... if you listen to Coast to Coast on... around the country, you hear a lot of these people, but Richard Dolan is an author of UFOs and the National Security Act, Chronology of the Cover-Up from 1947 to 1973. And people who don't know about 1947 was the Roswell crash, and supposedly the government recovered saucers and ET bodies at that point, and the national cover-up, the U.S. national cover-up of the ET presence began then. Also at the conference will be Stephen Greer, who is the founder and director of the disclosure process, and Greer's talked to Air Force pilots, Army officers, Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's addressed about the ET presence. He's been on Larry King. Actually, Stephen Greer is a great communicator on the subject of ET presences. I don't agree with everything he says. He says that a lot of the abductions are part of a military-industrial complex of program, but I personally think that the abductions are done by extraterrestrials for genetic information, and they're extracting the genes of humans from around the world to build a hybrid race that will have more human qualities. So I disagree with Stephen Greer on a lot of what he says, but he also has a lot of good things to say about free energy, and he takes people out to certain locations where he actually makes contact with ships overhead. He just brought a friend of mine to Crestone, Colorado, where they were able to see ships. Also at this conference will be Michael Sala, who was a pretty mainstream political analyst. He wrote The Hero's Journey Towards a Second American Century, but recently has really devoted his energy to understanding exopolitics and embracing ETs, ET technologies, understanding and opening up to an extraterrestrial presence. His latest book was Exopolitics, Political Implications of an Extraterrestrial Presence. I think he's a very important speaker. Also, Daniel Sheehan, who was working with John Mack at Harvard. And John Mack was a Harvard psychiatrist who came forward and wrote a book on abductions, ET abductions. Harvard says you can't say there have been ET abductions. That makes no sense at all. It ruins our reputation. They tried to get rid of him as a professor. Daniel Sheehan was one of the people who defended John Mack against Harvard, ensured his tenure, and he was able to keep his job, and Harvard had to acknowledge that John Mack was privy and authorized and qualified to say what he said about human Encounters with Aliens. That's the name of John Mack's book, Abductions, Human Encounters with Aliens, and Daniel Sheehan was very much a part of defending John Mack at Harvard, and he'll be there in Washington, and he's also a great guy. He has a lot to say about the ET presence. Another person at the conference will be Alfred Weber, and you just heard Stephen Bassett talk a lot about Alfred's ideas about exopolitics, government, and law in the universe. That's a recent book that
Alfred Weber wrote that has to do with how we're going to handle the whole ET planetary embrace. What position will governments take as they meet these extraterrestrial races? I mean, I think it's a coming together of a planetary consciousness when we meet something greater than ourselves. So a little review of that book, Exopolitics, Government, and the Law of the Universe, is that this is Weber's odyssey into the realm of life in the vast universe surrounding the planet, and a proposal of the coming up of a decade of contact, because as we meet these extraterrestrial races, it will be a shock for most people, so it'll be a slow integration period as we understand our role in a bigger cosmos. So I totally recommend people coming to this conference coming up. And again, if you want more information, go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, and then you can just go /exo-conference2007. The conference will take place at the it'll take place in, outside of Washington at the Gaithersburg Hilton, and September 14th to 16th. And my name is Alan Steinfeld, and you've been listening to New Realities, and I broadcast every week, Tuesdays, on bbsradio.com. You can also watch my television show at mnn.org every Monday night, 9 p.m. You can go to my website, newrealities.tv. I also welcome comments and emails at newrealities@earthlink.net. So newrealities@earthlink.net if you want to contact me, Alan Steinfeld, about any of the programs I've done in the past. And a lot of it has to do with different positions about ET presence. But I also have done shows about orphanages in Nepal and water rights around the world. So I try to include a whole scope of possibilities of how to build a new reality on the planet. So thank you for listening. I'm going to go out with a song about that actually an abductee wrote in the 1980s, Duke Williams and the Extremes, who I've interviewed on my television show, wrote this song called The Night Before the Future. And The Night Before the Future very much has to deal with what I think Stephen Bassett was saying about the extraterrestrial presence and coming forward, and how disclosure of that information will give a whole birth to a new reality on planet Earth. Thank you for listening tonight, and here is A Night Before the Future. This is Alan Steinfeld.
Take it away, or did you think you'd better off staying in bed and not doing a thing but relaxing your head? Just remember, the things you see might not quite be your own reality. The dimensions exist within the inner, and then you know you're just a beginner. Because life just starts, and when it ends, it turns around, and then it ends. Oh, man.
Williams, Night Before the Future, very fitting for the theme of this show with my guest, who was Stephen Bassett, who is hosting the Exo Politics Conference 2007 in Washington at the Hilton Gettysburg Hotel near Washington. That's September 14th to 16th. I'd like to thank Stephen for being a guest on tonight's show. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and please tune in each week at this time, 7:30 p.m. California time, 10:30 p.m. New York time, and listen to the latest in creating new realities. If you want to reach me, please email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and I look forward to hearing from you and doing next week's show. Thank you for tuning in. Good night.
Feels like heaven touching you this way.